Hi there. Welcome to Sound Healing Radio. My name's David Gibson, and our guest today is John Stuart Reed. Hi, John.
Hi.
John's in England, actually. And today we're going to be talking about his work, and he's going to be presenting at our Sound Healing Conference. And our intention for today is that all the souls on the planet might really finally understand how sound healing is working so that we can really bring it into the mainstream and get it back into hospitals and into homes. Does that sound good?
Sounds good to me, David.
Yeah. So we'll hold that intention for the whole show. Before we get started, though, I want to tell you about a few things happening at the school. We just started the semester this week. We've got the Sound Healing Certificate and Associate Degree Program. You could actually still jump in if you're interested in the area. And it's the certificate program is 3.5 months, and the degree program is 1.25 years. And it's a few nights a week, Monday through Wednesday nights. And it's really about how sound affects you physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. We've got about 20 different instructors that teach. We also have the summer intensive version coming up, June 8th to the 21st. And that's from 10 to 9:30 every day. And we haven't killed off a person yet. It's really immersive, and it's people go into the zone and don't come back. It's very, very powerful. And that June 8th to the 21st is just the first half of the certificate. You could actually do the second half of the certificate in August, August 3rd to the 15th. Or you could finish the certificate online. In fact, we have the entire certificate and associate degree online. We have people from all over the planet actually doing it. It works really well. We've got live instructors, or you can watch it by video. And then we can do a check-in every so often and answer questions. So that class is actually starting. You could actually start this Saturday or about every 2 weeks when we have a new instructor for the online classes. Or again, you could do the first half at the Institute June 8th and then do the rest online afterwards. We also teach audio recording here. We teach how you can use do audio recording to affect the body, mind, and psyche in a much deeper way. We teach Pro Tools, but if you're working with Ableton Live or Logic, you could also do that. We have that program that just started this week also, and you could jump in. But we do have an intensive version of that in between the two sound healing programs over the summer. So you could actually do the sound healing and the audio. So the audio intensive is June 24th to August 1st. And it's just about every day. We also have that program online, and that starts in about 2 weeks. And it works really well because I've got it set up so that Pro Tools is fed right into the program that we use that's similar to Skype. So you can hear what I'm mixing, and you can see Pro Tools on the screen, and it works really well. We've also got some events coming up. We've got on June 13th, we've got a Tibetan bowl concert with Karma Moffat. Karma is the Tibetan bowl master of the planet. He's got over 100 Tibetan bowls that are just amazing, and he loops them with a loop system, so he gets the whole room shaking. It's really, really effective, and that's at the school here in San Francisco. Also, we've got a big retreat happening in Mount Shasta, August 30th and 31st. We do this every year, and it's at Stewart Mineral Springs, the most amazing mineral water. It's unbelievably healing, and the retreat, the conference center is right on a river. It's just beautiful. And then, of course, we're right at the foot of Mount Shasta. So we've got all the Lemurians inside Mount Shasta humming along with us while we do the retreat. So it's very cool. You can check out all of this at soundhealingcenter.com. or you can call me at 415-777-2486, or you can email me at david@soundhealingcenter.com. We also, of course, have the store where you can, we've got a full range of crystal bowls, Tibetan bowls, didgeridoos, gongs, I mean, everything you can imagine for sound healing, which, by the way, our students get to use in the classes while you're at the school here. We also have about 15 different treatments we do. We also do massage on the sound table, and we also have my book, The Complete Guide to Sound Healing, which, again, you can find it all at soundhealingcenter.com. But the big thing we have happening and coming up is our Sound Healing Conference. This is the fourth conference we've done, and it's September 26th to the 29th in Oakland, just across the bay from San Francisco here. It's at a really cool place. There's a theater and an indoor conference area, so we got breakout rooms, and it's overlooking Lake Merritt, so it's really beautiful. But the amazing thing is on the fifth floor, there is this park that will hold 2,000 people. It's got fountains and gardens in it, so we're going to have an outdoor festival at the same time as we're doing the indoor conference. And the indoor conference, right now, it's only $210 for the 3 days, and then the post-conference workshops on the fourth day. And then the outdoor festival is only $25 if you want to just do that. And that's just Saturday and Sunday, the September 27th and 28th. We also have concerts every night. We've got David Hikes. We got a Power of Love concert where we rock out but get really, really mellow and really tuned in. And then we've got quite a few other things happening. We have healing rooms. We have 6 rooms where you can get sound healings for free after you get in, you know. And so if you're interested, check out GlobeSoundHealingConference.com, GlobeSoundHealingConference.com, or you can find all the information at SoundHealingCenter.com. So, again, today's guest is John Stuart Reed, who is one of our main keynotes at the conference. And John's going to be talking about his work. John, oh my God, John has done an amazing amount of work in the field of sound healing. He's really been working, I'll just give a brief overview and then I'll let you tell more detail about what you've been doing. But what I know is that John has been working with cymatics. Cymatics has been around a while, which is really the way sound affects matter. In the beginning, different people, and maybe you can even tell us a bit of the history, but different people have used powder or sand on plates and then vibrated the plates, and you get these unbelievable patterns in the sand that are actually like mandala patterns that are morphing and changing. They're dancing. And John and also working with Eric Larson as well, they're now working with water and have discovered that and have got some incredible pictures of water being vibrated by sound. And that shows that the sound is actually restructuring the water in the body. So now John is working with sound to find the actual cymatic sound pattern within a cell to be able to then map that to a sound, so you can actually put the sound into the cells that map to it perfectly, so that when you turn up the volume a little bit, it will feed the cell energy, actually releasing the stored energy in the cell. Or it will, if you turn up the volume, you can explode the cells. And there's also some work we'll talk about later that John did in the Great Pyramid in the King's Chamber as well. Is that kind of a good overview of what you do, John? Tell us more.
That's a very nice introduction, David. Okay. I think probably we should start with the Great Pyramid, because that really begins my journey of exploration in sound healing and indeed in cymatics. Mm-hmm. It all started way back in 1996. My father and I had been traveling in Egypt. In fact, we'd actually traveled in Egypt several times before that date. But this particular time, we were fortunate to be able to get into the Great Pyramid, and even more fortunate to be able to lie in the sarcophagus, which, you know, you're not supposed to do, but it was a little bit naughty, but I did it, and I'm really glad that I did it.
Oh, I got to do it too.
It's an amazing experience.
I'll tell you my experience in a bit when you're done here. Go ahead.
Okay, so what happened was, I lay in the sarcophagus. You know, I'm an acoustics engineer, I've studied sound for over 40 years. And so I was very interested in the amazing acoustics in that chamber, and more importantly, in this case, the amazing acoustics of the sarcophagus. You know, the sarcophagus is this 3.7-ton granite box, and which allegedly had the Pharaoh Khufu's mummy, held the mummy of Khufu, but, you know, that's an arguable point. But anyway, the main point in this case was that I wanted to actually lie in that sarcophagus simply to experience the resonance of the box, because many people have struck the box with their fist or with some object to hear it ring. It kind of rings like a low-pitched bell. And I knew this, you know, from having read about the Great Pyramid and so on. So I was really interested in the acoustic properties of that box. So I lay in the box, and then what I did was a glissando, yeah. You know, where you make a sort of smooth enunciation, just using a single note, but you sweep the note up through your vocal range. And normally what would happen if you did a glissando, say, in your bathroom at home, if it's got nice hard surfaces on the wall, you will always hear one particular note that is more dominant than any other. And you could call that note the prime resonant frequency or the prime mode of your bathroom. Well, in this case, of course, I was interested in what is the prime resonant frequency of the sarcophagus. And so I lay in it, and then I made this nice glissando sound. And at one particular frequency, every cell in my body tingled. And it felt like a kind of wave of energy that was washing up and down my body. And it was really quite something. I had never experienced anything like that before in all my many, many years, you know, in acoustics. And so obviously that got my attention straight away. I recognized that the frequency was probably in the round about 100 hertz, 100 hertz or maybe just above that is what I thought at the time. And so anyway, to cut a very long story short, David, because I know we don't have a lot of time today, what basically happened was it got my attention to such an extent that when my father and I came out of the pyramid, we talked about the experience, and I pretty much there and then realized that I was going to have to go back, and I was going to have to go back armed with a lot of acoustics test equipment. So when we got back to the UK, I made some inquiries and found out that they did allow research in the pyramid under certain circumstances. And so I made the arrangements. And a few months later, still in 1996, I went out there and did a first series of acoustics experiments in the Great Pyramid. Now, it wasn't this particular series that caused the major inspiration for me, certainly not in terms of the sound healing. It was because I was unable to complete all of the experiments in that first mission, and I therefore booked another mission for 1997. So it was when I went back in 97 that the real magic happened for me. I mean, I'd done some good work in 96, but what happened in 97 was absolutely extraordinary, because the work that I hadn't been able to do in 96 concerned a cymatics experiment that I had planned. And so in 97, I actually carried out the cymatics experiment, and I'd like to share that, you know, with your listeners today. Well, before I do so, let me just say this, that in 97, 3 weeks before I was due to go out to Egypt to carry out these experiments, I injured my lower back quite significantly. I mean, by the time I was due to go out to Egypt, I was in absolute agony. I really didn't even think I was going to be able to get into the pyramid, let alone carry out the experiment. So, but somehow or other I did. I took a lot of painkillers and, you know, I was, obviously I'd paid a lot of money to do this work. So I thought, right, I'm going to give it my best shot. So 97, I went into the pyramid with all this equipment. Other people carried it in, of course. I couldn't carry anything. I was in so much pain. And we set up this experiment, which was essentially an experiment in which I was going to try to see the resonances in the granite box. In other words, make them visible, which is the science of cymatics. It's the science of visible sound. And the way that I intended to do this was I had a membrane with me, a PVC membrane, which I stretched across the open top of the sarcophagus. I had to do quite a few repairs to the sarcophagus first with bits of styrofoam and gaffer tape and all sorts of bits and pieces like that. But essentially, after the repairs were done, I was able to stretch this membrane across the top, weight it around the perimeter with 43 little bags of sand to give a sort of even torsion across the surface. And then I had positioned a loudspeaker in the bottom of the sarcophagus to excite the whole sarcophagus. And I ran into that speaker a set of pure tones from an audio generator. And it took about an hour or so to set all of this up. And during this time, I was still in agony. I was still in a lot of pain, but I carried on anyway. And then what happened was really amazing, because when I started up the oscillator, this is the pure tones I was mentioning there, mm-hmm. What happened was that the sprinkling sand on the surface of the membrane, I was able to see all sorts of amazing patterns form. And many of these patterns looked like ancient Egyptian hieroglyphs. Yeah. Now the antiquities inspector, who had been sort of leaning against the wall, filing his nails and looking extremely bored up to this point, came running over and to see what these things were, you know, to get a better look at them. And he was absolutely astonished, as I was. How can you have ancient Egyptian hieroglyphs coming out in sand patterns on a granite sarcophagus? I mean, it was really astonishing. And that's it's a whole other story. I'm not going to get into that today because it would take a long time to explain my hypothesis for all that. I've had many, many years to think about it.
Did you ever have anybody look at them to see if they actually were actual hieroglyphs that people could read?
Oh, well, they're definitely, they're symbols. I mean, it's not like you can read them in the sense that there's enough of them to, you know, to get a message, but there are all sorts of symbols that are definitely hieroglyphic. I mean, there's no question about it. They are hieroglyphs. And I do have a hypothesis to explain it. And it's not kind of mysterious, but it's a very good solid, hypothesis. And, but anyway, what happened was about halfway through this experiment, I suddenly realized that all of the pain in my back had gone. Now, I know that a lot of listeners will be thinking, okay, the guy was high.
Oh, not our listeners.
Well, okay, not some people listeners. Will be thinking, well, the guy was high. You know, he was seeing something absolutely extraordinary, which I was. My body is, my bloodstream is obviously being pumped with endorphins at this point because I was so happy at what I was seeing. I was so elated. And so, you know, I know a lot of people will be thinking, this is why the pain in his back, you know, disappeared. Bearing in mind, I had been in agony and now I was actually, you know, being able to move about as if I had never had any pain. You know, I was completely pain free. It was really quite astonishing. Anyway, I couldn't focus on that at the time. I just had to get on because I had a very limited period of time allocated to me to do these experiments.
I have to say, probably a lot of our listeners are thinking, oh, no, we know that's the Syrians or the Palladians that built the pyramid, just sending source energy through you on the key acupuncture point of the whole
Earth. Oh, well.
You know, and that's what some of them are thinking that.
Okay, maybe. But anyway, David, so this was what really inspired me into my journey in sound healing and indeed in cymatics, because, you know, the cymatics experiment had been such a huge success. I mean, you know, seeing ancient Egyptian hieroglyphs in sand on an Egyptian sarcophagus was really quite something.
You know, before you continue, let me tell you about my experience in there.
Sure.
You know, so first of all, I went into the pyramid and was in there for about 3 hours with the public. We had an hour on our own as well. And I was toning the resonant frequencies of the room. You know, and I found every resonant frequency by doing the frequency sweep that you were talking about. And I did that in every temple in Egypt. And I got to know them really well. It was really cool because if you tone in there with the public, they'll throw you out. You know, so I closed my mouth and just went,
one knew who was making the sound.
Yeah, no one did. People were walking in and going, oh my God, you know, because I had no idea. It was really funny. So then I leaned over into the sarcophagus and did the frequency sweep. And when I hit the note, it was like, the whole room lit up like a Christmas tree. And everybody in the room goes, whoa, right? So I laid in the sarcophagus and started toning that same note that you did.
Yes.
And I went out of my body into the Akashic Records room below the pyramid, etherically.
Wow.
And there was this guard there in front of a door. And he said, I said, can I come in? And he says, no, your consciousness is not high enough. So then about an hour later, I went in again and toned, and the room had cleared out at that point. There was hardly any tourist in there. And I went again into this like etheric chamber underneath the pyramid, and I said, can I come in? And he said, okay. And he opens the door, and energy came streaming out of the door, which was actually more like information that came up through my spine, and I haven't been the same since.
Wow, David.
Yeah.
Astonishing. Well, I haven't been the same since either, but for different reasons. You know, I didn't have any of those kind of experiences. I've heard other stories, similar kinds of stories. You know, our very dear friend Freddie Silver had an amazing experience in there, and many other people that I've spoken with since. But in my case, it was this fundamental healing that had occurred. So I got on with the experiments, and, you know, I'm going to cut all that short now because we need to move on. But essentially, I'd just like to let everyone know that I was thinking the same. I was doubting, you know, why the pain had gone. And so what I thought was going to happen, whereas I hadn't been able to carry anything into the pyramids, other people had to carry everything in, I was actually able to carry equipment out. And, you know, it's not an easy thing. You'll have experienced that very low entrance corridor.
Kidding.
It's really difficult.
Just but even walking in this case, is hard.
Exactly. It's really difficult. So I was able to carry equipment out. And then I kept thinking to myself, you know, the pain's going to come back anytime now. Well, it never ever did. You know, I got back on the airplane
so
the next
cool.
day.
That's so
never,
cool.
The pain never ever came back. So obviously this got my attention. I thought, okay, so we've got two things here. We've got this amazing cymatics experiment, which is telling me something. It's telling me obviously that there's something really odd happened with those hieroglyphs, which is, like I've said, is an area I don't think we can really get into today because it would take too long.
Mm-hmm.
But I was nevertheless blown away by the success of the experiment in terms of just being able to see the resonances of that granite box, inherent in the granite box. And so, you know, when you can see something, David, it suddenly becomes more real for you. You can understand it at a deeper level than you can with your other senses. And so cymatics is this amazing new emergent science that is allowing us to see sound and to see vibration.
Excuse me a second. Do you have pictures of that somewhere on your website anywhere?
Yes. If you go to the, are you talking about the Egyptian experiments?
Uh-huh, yeah.
Yeah, if you go to our website, cymascope.com, C-Y-M-A, and then scope, like microscope or whatever, .com, and go hit on the Egyptian button, you will go to a section that shows all the experiments that I did, in brief, of course, and some of the images are there as well. So yes, people can go and have a look at that. Right. So I was inspired. First of all, to investigate why had the pain in my back disappeared. I was inspired to create some form of a device that would use this new science of cymatics, or emergent science, let's call it. We really can't yet call it a true science, and for reasons I'll get into a little bit later. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so I was inspired, and that was the beginning of the journey. I mean, that's like 18 years ago now. It seems like yesterday almost, but it was 18 years ago that happened. And so the result of all of that was that I did invent this instrument called a cymoscope. And yes, Eric Larson helped a lot in the development of that instrument. And we have it at a level now where, as you said correctly in your introduction, David, we're no longer using sand. Why? Because sand is very two-dimensional, for one thing. It also has quite a lot of mass. And so when you excite sand with high frequencies, you tend to get virtually no result. You'd have to have enormous energy levels to make the sand physically move into position. So that's a big disadvantage straight away. This was realized at quite an early stage in the development of this device. And so what we are now using is simply pure water. There's nothing better that we have found. We've tried all sorts of other liquids, and water, just pure water, is the best liquid for the job. And the reason for that is because in the science of cymatics, all you're really wanting to do is to excite a membrane. You remember what I was saying? I used a PVC membrane in the sarcophagus in the Great Pyramid. Even that has quite a lot of mass. You know, PVC is quite a dense material. But when you use the surface of water, is a type of membrane. Of course, it has surface tension, but the mass is virtually nothing. I mean, it's got so little mass. What it means is that you can imprint a sound, any sound, onto the surface of water under certain controlled conditions. And of course, you have to have certain lighting conditions as well to be able to see that sound being made visible on the surface tension of the water. So where we're at now is that the cymoscope is this wonderful new scientific instrument that allows us to see sound. Any sound can be made visible, right from infrasound. We can go right down now to 3 hertz. We can see sounds down as low as that. And up, currently the bandwidth goes up to 3000 hertz. But the recent work that we're doing now is taking the frequencies even higher. We're now getting up towards 5000, not with the cymoscope, but with other equipment that we're now using with a microscope that I'd like to share some details with a little bit later. So that's the kind of area of sound that we're able to now see. And, of course, it's opening up so many areas of science. You know, we can study astroseismology with this, which is the science of the sounds of stars, which is a science indeed in the world, and cosmologists and astrophysicists are using this new science to study what is happening inside stars. So
how's that related?
Well, it's related because what happens is, you know, the light of a star fluctuates very, very to a tiny degree. It's not the twinkle, twinkle little star that you can see when you look up in the heavens. You know, that is simply caused by atmospheric conditions causing the light to twinkle. But if you can look at a star without any atmospheric twinkling, as it were, you would see with your instrumentation that the light of the star is actually fluctuating in a very tiny amount, tiny degree. And that tiny fluctuation in the light is being caused by sounds that are actually happening within the star.
Oh, okay.
And so what astrophysicists are doing is they're able to effectively extract these sounds by a simple process, although obviously extremely sensitive equipment, but it's nevertheless quite a simple process. And by monitoring the sounds within the star, they can learn far more about the processes that are going on within the star. You know, there's an atomic furnace there, and they can understand far more about it. What we do is to take those sounds and put them through the cymoscope and actually see the sounds of the star made visible.
Wow.
So we've got astroseismology, we've got biology, we've got musicology, we've got phonology, the study of speech sounds, we've got oceanography, the sounds of the dolphins are making that we are making visible, and we're actually making really great strides in that area with understanding dolphin language now. It can be used in the area of physics. It can be used in the area of zoology. In other words, basically, almost every science can be studied with a cymoscope. However, as I was saying earlier, it is early days. The cymoscope is a new device. Cymatics is an emergent science. It's not really a true science yet. And the reason it's not yet a true science is simply because the mathematics needed to describe these very complex processes that occur when sound imprints onto a membrane. You see these, you know, this is not a static pattern, David. This is a dynamic, beautiful pattern. It's like a kaleidoscope, but it's ever changing. Mm-hmm. As the harmonics in the sound change and mix, so the pattern changes. So it's immensely complex. And we've been working with one of the world's top mathematicians to help unravel the mathematics of this. And even he has said, and I don't want to name names at this stage, but he said it will take many, many years to actually unravel the mathematics of cymatics. And until we have those mathematics, it's not really ever going to be, well, not ever, but it will take many years before it becomes a true science. Mm-hmm. You know, science is about measurement, but it's also and replication, of course, which we can do, but it's also about understanding the mathematics behind a physical process. And currently we don't have that mathematics yet.
So the whole thing really becomes then, it's really being able to see what's going on with sound and how sound is affecting different things, and really a feedback mechanism. But what's the applicability?
Well, the applicability is all those subject areas that I've just mentioned. You know, the fact is that if you can use the cymoscope, well, we can use the cymoscope to study all these different areas of science. Mm-hmm. Then once the mathematics are understood, then it will open new vistas. It will make so many new discoveries. One of the discoveries that we've already made with the cymoscope is that sound not only imprints the membrane of water, but also creates structure within the water itself. You mentioned that earlier. Uh-huh. Now, that has been assumed for quite a long time by a lot of different people in the world, that water is able to be structured by sound. But finding the evidence for that, you know, the actual hard proof, mm-hmm. was a different matter. And we have actually succeeded in that. And that is, they are results that will be published in the not too distant future. So when I say we are able to, we've proven this, we have visible proof of sound actually creating structures, not just on the surface of the water, but actually under the surface of the water. And what that it's a very important discovery for sound healing, of course, because, you know, everyone for many, many years, I mean, sound healing has been a kind of, it's an area that no one has understood. I mean, it's still not well understood. We know that it works, and indeed, you know, I had my own significant healing, as we mentioned earlier, of my lower back. Mm-hmm. But then understanding how that happened, you know, the actual mechanism is a very big question. And so I should mention at this point, you know, that sound healing in the modern world, you could say, has been going on since the early part of the last century. Around about 1928, there was a German scientist called Erwin Schliefeck, and he came to a conclusion that sound healed. I mean, this has been known for, you know, thousands of years by the Aboriginals in Australia and many other people. Pythagoras believed it. Many, many people in history have believed that sound healed and have, you know, demonstrated it to their own satisfaction, of course. But again, from a scientific viewpoint.
Well, you know, I was a physics major at UC Berkeley to start. And in the classes, what I do is I talk about, you know, exactly how sound can create, can trigger the stored energy of the resonance of something. And that simply releases energy. And that, so it seems like there's two ways you can use it with matter, is to either resonate what is right so that the cell or organ really, really starts humming at its frequency, or you can resonate what's wrong and turn up the volume and explode it. And that's, we know very specifically how those two mechanisms work precisely. What we don't know is all the frequencies within the body of every cell, every part of the body. And it's really kind of crazy that that research hadn't been done. And that's why I set up the Sound Healing Research Foundation to do exactly that.
Yes. Well, it still hasn't been done really to any, you know, any significant extent. It's really still, well, not in any significant way. I mean, if we talk about ultrasound, I mentioned another German scientist, Reimar Pohlmann, who in 1938 discovered that ultrasound could heal, accelerate the healing rate of damaged tissues and so on. And ultrasound, you know, in the 1950s really became popular, and it's still popular today. You know, ultrasound is used in medical settings all around the world. And if you have a broken bone that you've disturbed, you know, if a fracture has been beginning to heal and then you disturb that fracture, very often your body will refuse to heal that fracture. It just stops the process. Well, they use ultrasound to kind of re-stimulate the bone to begin healing again. That's one method. Another use is to use ultrasound for soft tissue injuries. Very, very, very popular in sports injury clinics, but again, also in some hospital settings. And yet, even though ultrasound is an accepted allopathic method, you know, it's mainstream. Ultrasound is mainstream. Even though it's mainstream, there's nothing known really about the mechanism as to how it actually
works. It's interesting. Can we? There's one part that, to get a little more detailed, that I've been thinking about a lot. That, because this is what I teach also, is, you know, there's frequency. You can go up and down a frequency and find the frequency, but it seems that the deal is not so much the frequency, although that's important, as well as the harmonic structure mapping. So that's the whole timbre or combinations of frequencies that map to an actual part of the body to really make it work. And with it's so funny that with ultrasound and with these serious technologies, they're not even getting that detailed.
No, indeed not. Let's move on to talk about,
because we only have about 10 minutes. So
okay, let's quickly cover what it is we're going to be talking about. Annalise and I, you know, Annalise is my wife, but she's also wonderful. She's got huge experience in the area of sound healing. Not only with natural sound healing, like she had an amazing experience with dolphins, for example, that healed her, but also with cymotherapy, which is a machine that's no longer available. But, you know, it's one of the modalities, one of the sound healing modalities that has been explored by Annalise. But anyway, let me just very quickly go over what it is that we're going to be talking about at the conference. We were inspired by the work of a professor, James Jimczewski, who has created a new science. It's the science of that he calls sonocytology, and it's basically the science of listening in to the sounds or the songs of living cells. And what we have done is we've used this, we've kind of taken a stepping stone from James Jimczewski's work of listening to the songs of cells to try to understand how sound healing might actually work, you know, what the mechanisms would be. And so, for example, in the talk, we will be playing the sound of a healthy cell, and we will also be playing the sound of a stressed cell. So it's the same cell, but it's being stressed. And the two different, the sounds are significantly different. And then what we're going to be doing is showing those sounds made visible on the cymoscope, but we're also going to be showing those two different sounds on a spectrum analyzer. So we'll be actually seeing the spectrum of frequencies. You know, you were talking there about harmonics, mm-hmm. and it's very, very important because the sounds that living cells make as a part of their normal metabolic process, those cells almost certainly hold the key to how sound healing works. At least this is one particular approach that we are taking. And so we're going to be talking about that and showing how the frequencies of a cell physically change when the cell is stressed. So, you know, this old thing where people use an analogy of the body as a musical instrument, and the musical instrument goes out of tune. So you have to play the correct melody to the, you know, back to the body to bring it into harmony and all that kind of thing. I've been so skeptical of that for many, many years. It seemed too simplistic. I probably was afraid of it because of the, you know, it's, or doubted it because of the simplicity. But actually, it's what we're finding. You know, this work is showing just that.
But, you know, I've got a question here because, you know, what I've really come to believe is it's not so much that the cell or the part of the body is going out of tune, because when something changes its note, it's a different type of cell. That it's more that it's just buzzing, that it's a buzz, and it's not humming at a consistent vibration. It's actually going into if you look at a actual waveform, it's actually breaking down into noise or static as opposed to a complete waveform that is consistently vibrating. And I think of that as that's what stress is just a buzz. And we can feel it in our body when it begins as a buzz. And only when that buzz is there for many years or a long period of time does it turn into a whole different out of tuneness, which is then like a whole different type of cell, like cancer.
Mm. Well, I'd certainly be really interested to see some details of that, David, when we get together in September. This work that we've been doing is really very, very simple. But of course, sometimes it is the simple things that are profound. And anyway, so we're going to be talking about that, the work of James Jimczewski and our work in relation to that, sonocytology. And the other thing that we're going to be investigating or talking about is the work of Bruce Lipton. Now, you know, Bruce Lipton's work has shown that the membrane around a cell is actually the brain of the cell. So it's not the, you know, it's not the nucleus of the cell that's the brain, it's actually the membrane. Well, this is very important from a cymatics point of view, of course, because as we were saying earlier, you know, we are currently in the cymoscope, we are imprinting sounds onto the surface of a membrane. And this membrane is a water membrane, just as the cell itself is essentially mostly water, and it has a membrane. So one of the areas that we are now studying is sound at the cellular level. In other words, what is really happening in terms of the pattern of energy that you might be playing to yourself, you know, with either a sound healing device or if you're just listening to some beautiful music, what is happening at the cellular level? What kind of patterns are forming on the surface of your cells in your body? And how important are those patterns to the healing process? So that's the other area, very, very important area that we're going to be talking about in our presentation. And not only talking about it, but actually showing the results, you know, showing imagery from our microscope and from our cymoscope and talking in detail about these potential mechanisms. You and know, I should say, I was going to say, nothing is yet proven. This is all hypothesis, but at least we are making a really good start at, understanding the potential mechanisms, let's say.
Yeah, it's really cool. What, because once you, you, even after you figure out the mechanisms, then the question is, what are the frequencies you're going to be transmitting? Which one could be just the resonant, the natural resonance of the harmonic structure of the cell itself. Or you could then look at other frequencies like love and see, and gratitude and compassion and see how those affect the cell. Because, you know, really to tap into the divine template of source energy, that it, that's much smarter than what we can figure out, but we keep trying to do it and we can do it and actually figure out, make very good headway with our, you know, just even, helping, you know, do the basic things that we can figure out ourselves.
Absolutely. Well, one of the very simple, mechanisms by which we believe it would be possible for sound healing to take place is simply by using nature's own sounds. Nice. I'm talking about the sound of the ocean, for example, or the sound of a waterfall, or the sound of a very busy stream, because all of those type of natural sounds are contain virtually every frequency of sound. They are, it's white noise, you could call it white noise, which is very often the term used. And you know, it simply means every frequency of sound. Well,
but you know, white noise, when in physics, understood white noise as being no frequency. It's actually incomplete frequency waveforms that are actually no frequency.
No, white noise is theoretically every frequency. So that all of the frequencies
that's
are there.
Not, that's not what I learned in my physics class, but that's
okay. And they're all combined. And what we are hypothesizing is that when you immerse yourself in a white noise environment, providing the intensity is not too high, because if it's too high, it would actually stress you. But if it's at a kind of moderate level or a low level of white noise, then the cells of your body actually absorb the frequencies that they are missing and effectively reject the rest. And that's something else that we're going to be discussing in this presentation and, again, showing results. So I think that it's going to be a really interesting presentation, David.
I'm really excited to join it myself. I can't wait to really see it.
Well, we are excited to be, to be presenting this information, this research.
Cool. Thank you so much for coming over. So anything else you want to share before we end here?
I think I've probably said enough, but thank you, David. It's been wonderful, and I'm really delighted to have chatted with you today. And Annalise and I are very excited to be presenting in September.
Cool. Well, thank you so much for joining us today.
Pleasure. And
so I want to end with, again, our intention is that we may bring this information into the light. So everybody, especially the people that are not the choir of sound healing, so that the masses can really understand how this works. So we can then, again, believe in it as it has been believed in ancient times and bring it back into the mainstream so that we can again heal ourselves and heal each other and take our power back.
Absolutely, David.
Yeah. So hold that intention for the rest of the weekend, the rest of the week ahead, months ahead, years ahead. Imagine that that happens in lifetimes ahead. Thanks for listening, and thank you, John. Take care.
Bye-bye.